It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 23rd day of August 2023. There is officially less than a month left in summer 2023. This is the horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday. 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And where, if you pop into the chat room right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky, for this prayer meeting Wednesday, and where the conversation is always scintillating. Hey, Theo. Hey, Squeaky. And where you are moderated, not at all capably, by, well, yours truly. I don't know if anybody else is going to wander along or not, but we'll see how it pans out. Whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast, if you would please be so kind, be so helpful as to like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you take it. Whatever platform, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn. If you listen live via TuneIn, hit that little heart button. We're trying to build the listenership over there too. Leave a comment if you please. That would be very helpful. And tell your friends and neighbors about what's going on here. Come February, this broadcast will be 20 years old, and there just aren't a lot of progressive radio shows that can say that. But we can. Hi, I'm Robin. Like I said, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday. We've got a Prayer Meeting Wednesday story or two. But it's also the day of the first great pageant of the Republican presidential nominating process. We have some news out of Hotlanta, Georgia, in which the gang that can neither ride nor shoot straight continues to deal with the RICO charges and election interference charges.
We didn't interfere. They interfered.
Oh yay! I'm no longer the incapable moderator of the chat room. There's Roger in Oregon. Thanks, Roger. Roger said he won't be here on Friday, family camping trip. Still eager to hear about the big high school reunion. That should be a fun tale on some future Friday. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different, and so consequently, we say thank you to our 23rd day of the month subscribers. And that means that thanks go out to Lou. Thank you, Lou. And thank you to David Melamuna Mello. Having enunciatory problems. Sibilance. David and Mellow Moonlit Meadow, thank you both so much for being partial sponsors of the program. And big thank yous going out to Norman. Norman in Wisconsin. Thanks, Norman. Norman said, hey, Robin, have a show on me. Thank you, Norman. That is that's so kind, so generous, and so very helpful. Because that takes us back down to only $1,435 to go. $1,435 to go to get caught up with fundraising as we race toward the end of the month of August. Thank you, Norman. Thank you so very much. It is so appreciated. We all do. And it makes bill paying considerably easier. I really do. I really do. I cannot thank you enough, Norman. Thank you. And thanks for being a member of the community. And tuning in and listening, whether live or via the podcast. Thank you. So it is midweek. And like I said, the first pageant, of course, without Nitwit Nero, or at least that's the way it's playing out. Yeah, we'll come along this evening. Honestly, I don't know what time it is. It's coming from Milwaukee. So I'm assuming maybe an 8 o'clock start time in Milwaukee would be a 9 o'clock start time on the East Coast. A 6 o'clock start time on the Pacific Coast. I don't know. And frankly, if anybody's interested in... Yeah, if anybody's interested in watching this derp circus, as far as I'm concerned, the only reason to do that would be to see if Chris Christie, how mean he's willing to be. Mean in a good way. Not just calling out Nitwit Nero as a chicken shit. And a coward, both of which he is. But to see if he will refer to people like, Nimrata Haley, or God knows, Monkey Up Duclantis, or any of the other dwarves, for the lickspittles that they are. And it's being broadcast on Fox, so... I generally don't go to Fox because I prefer not to have my brains leak out of my ears. Right. I don't know. And just, you know, for anyone who's curious, no. I do not have a Jeroboam of Mexican gasoline tequila, nor a swirly straw, nor a swirly IV for that matter, to get me through. I don't know. I don't. It seems like a giant waste of time, except for the spectacle of seeing if Chris Christie will do anything. So that's where all that stands. Now, that having been said, well, it's not like I didn't tell him. There's value in listening to this program, if only... If Genny Prigozhin had been listening, he would have known, as Brother Deacon Asa reminded me earlier today. He would have known to stay off small aircraft. An Embraer small commuter jet crashed in Mother Russia today. And the 10 people on board, well, to call to mind Jesse Lee Peterson,
they did.
And one of them, and it has been confirmed by Russian authorities, was Evgeny Prigozhin. Imagine that. I wonder if the head of the Wagner Group, the guy who scared Pooty Poot waterboweled a couple of months back with a little march on Moscow. And whom Pooty said, he will be perfectly safe in Belarus. He is going to go and live in Dacha there. And then he corkscrewed into the ground north of Mother Moscow. Go figure. Hell of a coinky-dinky, isn't it? And as far as I can tell, in the for-profit media, everybody is absolutely beside themselves waiting for the pageant this evening. Nitwit Nero, meanwhile, will be featured in a pre-recorded interview with noted testicle toaster, Tokyo Rose Carlson. It's not live, and that's airing on that website owned by derpy Batman villain Leon Scum. Whether it's going to work or not, we don't know. But the reason they had to pre-record it is because Nitwit Nero is not important enough for the testicle toaster to actually stay in America and interview live. No, because testicle-toasting Tokyo Rose Carlson, well, he's over in Hungary sucking up to the fascist autocrat Viktor Orban. He's also going to meet with the president of Serbia, also a fascist. And I'm sure they're going to talk about things like desperately dangerous gender ideology of decadent running dog capitalist West, or some such silly shit as that. But Nitwit Nero's just trying to get eyeballs off the screen because he's scared to death of, oh, look, there he is again, Chris Christie. And he hopes the maggots will tune in if they can find the platform owned by derpy Batman billionaire Leon Scum. My money is definitely not on Emery and Marvelline being able to do that. But maybe I'm wrong. I find it absolutely hilarious that Nitwit Nero, in his negotiations with the Atlanta Fulton County DA's office, managed to get clean.
Well, you know, the only time I can be there is during prime time on Thursday evening for me to get arrested and booked and printed. Will y'all take me at my word on what my weight is? That's what I'm really worried about.
Earlier today, he said,
friend, can you believe it? I'll be flying to Atlanta tomorrow to be wrongfully arrested by a radical left district attorney who lets violent murderers and true criminals run wild in her city. I will be arraigned at Fulton County Jail, which has been described as a humanitarian crisis and a violent jail where guards have collected over 1,000 shanks fashioned from crumbling walls.
Huh. I could swear I remember him telling cops back during his nitwit reign to stop being quite so nice to all of those prisoners. Bump them in the head once in a while, why don't you? This marks the fourth act of election interference to try and imprison the leading opponent of the current regime. Who would have thought that the nation of Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and Lincoln would ever fall so close to tyranny? Sadly, America is sitting in a very dark place today. We truly are a nation in decline.
Well, maybe we wouldn't be declining so much if a million people hadn't died in the COVID pandemic that he let run wild all over the country, but oh well. And we still don't know, really, statistically. We don't know how many dead maggots there are. How many maggots didn't take their vaccines. How many maggots put onions in their socks and drank pee-pee and used aquarium cleaner to hold off the Rona.
Make no mistake, even as I am about to be arrested for the fourth time as an innocent man, my resolve to save America is unbreakable. The more they threaten me with these intimidation tactics...
Dipshit, you're not being threatened. You're being indicted. Four times for a total of, well, 91 charges.
The more they try to imprison me as an innocent man...
They don't want to imprison any innocent men. Or even any innocent Trumps. They only want to imprison you if you're found guilty. Now, the fact that it looks like you were, well, I mean, you're as innocent as a newborn baby. Newborn baby rat.
The more they try to, the more I know that we must win our mission to save our country, or America will be forever lost to tyranny.
So, you know, I'm just having a little bit of fun with this. But he refers to Fani Willis as a radical left district attorney who lets violent murderers run wild in her city. That's arguably already in violation of the bond agreement that he signed. We'll see if it comes to anything. And of course, he's using the
"I'm rubber, you're glue, it bounces off me and sticks to you,"
because this is the, you know, indicting him as election interference. But it's not. He's going to remain on the ballot. He may even be the nominee, in which case he'll be in the election. You know, unless he's in the joint. And he's, like I said, he's scared shitless of this pageant this evening. Now, this this statement came from senior maggot Chris La Civita. Not from him directly. President Trump has already won this evening's debate because everything is going to be about him. Only President Trump has the policy ideas, the fortitude, and the polling to go head-to-head with crooked Joe Biden in the general election. You should also expect the Fox host to show an unnatural obsession with President Trump tonight, asking other Republican candidates over and over to react to President Trump's policy positions. In fact, we'll be tallying the number of times President Trump's name is brought up. And probably at some point they'll say it was a list that was so, there were so many mentions that it would have, if it was stacked up, it would have reached the height of the Washington Monument. When the other candidates do get a chance to speak, there'll be a faint echo or maybe even a copycat of President Trump's Make America Great Again agenda. Tonight's Republican undercard event really shouldn't even be called a debate, but rather an audition to be a part of President Trump's team in his second term. It's almost like they're scared to even mention Chris Christie. Chris Christie. Chris Christie. You know, Beetlejuice. Pathetic, really. Oh, but there is some stupidity at work here. Lou pointing out, tomorrow we find out Trump's true weight and true height, hopefully without lifts. I hope they don't just take his word for it. If they don't have a scale there, it'll be a real pity.
Oh no, I'm 180 pounds. Yeah, and it's all muscle.
Dave and the Blind. How about agave concentrate toothpaste? A pure blue agave fermented toothpaste. That's what you need, Robin. Tear each other apart with wet noodles, trying to be the liberal help here that I am, and your buddy, Dave and the Blind. I'd probably jack my sugar up too much. That agave's awful sweet. Like me. Matt in San Francisco says, I have 2 months. 2 months into the trial, he shows up in a wheelchair with a lap blanket, hiding his naked from the waist down. I get a toaster. If he drools, they throw in a dozen bagels. All right, somebody make a note of it. 2 months into the trial, wheelchair, naked from the waist down, plaid blanket, drooling, toaster and a dozen bagels. Gotcha. Nobody else can have that. Matt has nailed that one down. Oh, and one of the dweebs who was expected on the debate stage tonight may not be there. Yeah. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. What's the matter with the governor? He's got a case of the Burgums. No, I think he may still be in the hospital. You know, we had the story. Oh, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, where Kevers McCarthy, the weaker speaker, the man with the spine of silly putty, advised every one of his members, listen, stay off the damn bikes and get somebody else to clean out your gutters, stay off the ladders. Well, Doug Burgum is not a member of the House of Representatives, but he might have done well to heed Kevers McCarthy because, well, he's just a cool guy, Doug Burgum. You know, he's out there protecting good God-fearing North Dakotans from the trans, making sure the potties of North Dakota are all safe and secure, making sure that he, Doug Burgum, can keep a weather eye on the uterus of every woman of childbearing age in North Dakota Stan. And, well, it takes a lot out of a guy doing all that work like that. And so he needed a little relaxation time, and he looked at his team and said, hey, guys, let's go out and play a little pick-up hoops. What do you say? And so they did. It was kind of ironic. I've started watching Winning Time, the second season of HBO's Showtime, the story of the rise of the Laker dynasty. And no spoilers, I mean, it's based on historic events, but, you know, season two shows the Lakers all stoked for making a run to repeat their 1980 championship, when lo and behold, on the practice court, not doing anything particularly odd, Magic Johnson blew out his knee, throwing the entire Lakers season into chaos that year, 81. Well, that's, I mean, he's no Magic Johnson, but that's kind of what happened to Doug Burgum. Just a friendly game of pickup hoops, and the next thing you know, Doug Burgum. Sink not draining right? Get out your Burgum and burgle it a little bit. Toilet not flushing? Get the plunger, push out all the Burgum. No, Doug Burgum blew out his ankle and probably will not be on stage this evening in Milwaukee. Aw, darn. I know. I'm sure everybody and their cousin will be live blogging this thing. Meanwhile, the Democrats are actually doing better at messaging. There are billboards all over Milwaukee and near the venue, and they're running ads in the market and ads in national media with things like a billboard that says, tax cuts for yacht owners, and Joe Biden responding, good luck with that, champ. But for what it's worth, yeah, it's 9 p.m. Eastern on both Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and Fox Business Network Radio Rwanda. They'll stream it live at their website. And it'll be on Rumble. Oh, well, whatevs. It's interesting, though, that I have heard it said today that if Florida fascist Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis doesn't absolutely just put it out of the park, well, that he may be toast. And that might propel WeWeck. Thank you, Suman. That might propel WeWeck Ramaswamy into second place. Who, by the way, is a fucking weirdo. Sorry, best I can do. I mean, the Atlantic reporting on WeWeck Ramaswamy. I remember what Suman told us. It's properly pronounced WeWeck, but asshole is the same in any language. This is a case of, well, a tech bro gets a little money under his belt, and the next thing you know, he thinks he's a smart guy. The profile in The Atlantic, however, notes, Ramaswamy doesn't consider himself a culture warrior. He insists that he is merely speaking the truth. He presents his ideas as self-evident eternal truths. I asked him if he believes that truths can change over time. get the hockey puck, because this is about to get really, whew, you know, get the butterfly net. For instance, what did he make of the fact that for most white Americans, that they used to view it as a truth that black people were genetically inferior, that they weren't fully human? Responding, Wewak Ramaswamy said, "I don't think that's true." The interviewer said, "It is true. That's partly what justified slavery." To which Wewak Ramaswamy said, "Well, that was just a justification. It wasn't a belief." Huh? What is, huh? Look at emperors. Hey, don't blame this one on me. I'm not the one going off to Rome. This is Wewak Ramaswamy. Look at emperors. Septimus Severus in Rome. He was black. He had dark skin. They viewed dark skin as the way we view dark eyes. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Somebody get Mary Beard on the blower to straighten up. Nah, you can't straighten up Wewak Ramaswamy because he's a tech bro. He knows everything. History began the day that he was born. And not to put too fine a point on it, but it's not like the people of Rome, SPQR, Senatus Populusque Romani, it's not like they voted Septimus Severus in. By the time Septimus Severus comes along, there was one way, maybe two, of becoming emperor of Rome. And by far and away, the most popular means was to have yourself several legions, kill the guy on the throne, and have your legions proclaim you emperor, which is exactly what happened with Septimus Severus. But he wasn't done with the idea that believing black people inferior to whites was a justification but not a belief. Can we dial up zombie John C. Calhoun and see if it was just a justification for slavery, or if all of those beliefs that he espoused were the real deal? Or maybe, the other Confederate, maybe Judah Benjamin or Alexander Stevens. Because they were all pretty much on board with the idea that black people were inferior to their white enslavers. I'm not going all Civil War here, I promise. Matt in San Francisco says, Ramaswamy, he puts a happy young face to the toxic hate. Yeah, well, he's... One gets the idea he's an aspiring member of the manosphere, you know, that agglomeration of masculine, manly men of masculine manliness, the world inhabited by the Charlie Kirks and the Matt Dysphoria Beard Walshes and the Benny Dry Wife Shapiros and the Andrew Tates and the Joe Rogans and the MGTOWs, the men going their own way and whatnot. He'll be on the stage in Milwaukee this evening. Lord, yes, I suppose he will. And, well, one dare not expect much of the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda interrogators, the talking heads, but maybe somebody can ask him about January 6th. Because he says that the people, the domestic terrorists, Remember, we have the courage here to refer to January 6, 2021, for what it was, a domestic terror attack on the seat of constitutional government in the United States and upon the Constitution itself. Wewek Ramaswamy says that the people, the domestic terrorists, were lied to and that they were suppressed, S-U-P-P-R-E-S-S-E-D. Sorry, way back in time. I think he was maybe in fifth grade. Ferg got knocked out of the spelling bee on suppress. He has never misspelled it since. In fact, if you even say the word suppress to my dear son, the first thing out of his mouth will be suppress, S-U-P-P-R-E-S-S, suppress. Bothered him mightily. So, yeah, they've been suppressed. And Wewek Ramaswamy, even in the absence of Doug Burgum, Emilio noting Burgum. Isn't that what the Swedish chef says? It kind of sounds like, Is it the nonsense that begins one of those Def Leppard songs? Burgum, I got something to say. But he's prepared, had Doug Burgum been there, he wasn't going to let him steal the limelight with hating on, you know who. Because he has said, In regard to a trans person, I think there's something else going wrong in that person's life. Badly wrong. Yeah, what, tech bro? But, you know, he's a bro dude. And the primary purpose of bro dudes in America today is to be just asking questions, J-A-Q-ing, jacking off. Just asking questions. Never mind that they're really dumb questions, and they tend to come up with even dumber answers, but, you know, it's just who they are, whatever. And then, let's see, affirmative action, he says that's a cancer. No word yet on what he actually calls an actual cancer. But he says when it comes to the cancer that is affirmative action, I'm going to end it in every sphere of American life. Well, he may have to get up early to do that, because we got another story about a guy who's, well, another one of those little darlings of our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties. May get to it this evening. And he wants to use the United States military to close the southern border, which is going to be a little problematic because of that there Posse Comitatus Act that says you can't use the military for law enforcement purposes. That's why we have an actual separate border patrol. If he wants to use the military, he's going to have to, invade Mexico. And, let's see, he wants to end the war in Ukraine by giving up a whole bunch of Ukraine to Putin and Mother Muscovy. He says that the United States should secure the territorial integrity of Taiwan only up to 2028. And after that, well, you know, Katie bar the door. Or, you know, Xi Jinping bust the door down. But the best part out of that Atlantic article is probably when he gets to talking about, oh, no. This is where we would, if we were doing video, we would insert the meme of poor Captain Picard, there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, with his head in the palm of his hand. Oh no, not this shit again. 9/11. And this is Wewek Ramaswamy at peak jacking off.
Just asking questions.
Wewek Ramaswamy wants to know how many police, how many federal agents are on the planes that hit the Twin Towers. He went on to say, yeah, maybe the answer is zero. Probably is zero, for all I know, right? I have no reason to think it was anything other than zero. But if we're doing a comprehensive assessment of what happened on 9/11, we have a 9/11 commission, absolutely, that should be an answer to the public knows the answer to. Well, if we're doing a January 6th commission, absolutely, those should be questions that we should get to the bottom of. See, this is what happens when you're a tech bro and you think that history began with you. You'd think that there had been no investigations whatsoever into September the 11th. Now, I was around for it. I objected, for instance, to letting George W. Bush, the President of the United States, on September the 11th, 2001, I objected to his insistence that he only speak to the 9/11 Commission as long as he was not under oath and able to sit on Darth Cheney's lap. But that's what we got. And so these law enforcement officers, who he said are probably zero, well, nonetheless, I don't think this guy's okay. Nonetheless, he says, here are the people who were armed, here are the people who are unarmed. What percentage of the people who were armed were federal law enforcement officers? I think it was probably high, actually, right? Wait a minute, he thought it was zero earlier. But again, he's just jacking off, just asking questions. This guy is, in short, well, a nutbag. And I'm still trying to figure out for the life of me who told him he should run for president. I got nothing, really. I don't. But the stage is set for a great deal of wing nuttery and tomfoolery this evening. And in the ongoing saga of people like Kenneth Cheesebro, I still think the word Cheesebro is absolutely hilarious. Because we got, for instance, Wewek Ramaswamy, who's a tech bro, and we got over there in the White House during the nitwit Nero maladministration, a cheese bro. Was he from Wisconsin? But Mark Meadows and Jeffrey Clark, the guy who was itching to be Attorney General of the United States because he wanted to play Renfield to nitwit Nero's Dracula and eating bugs and everything. They ran off to the United States District Court for the Northern District of Georgia today. begging the court for an emergency order forbidding Fonnie Willis from even trying to prosecute Mark Meadows and Jeffrey Clark. Because Mark Meadows doesn't want to have to put up bail. Mark and Jeffrey Clark does not want to have to put up bail, and they don't want their fingerprints taken, and they don't want their photograph taken. They don't want their weight and their height published. And they ran off, in point of fact, when they ran off to the Northern District of Georgia, they ran off to a U.S. District Judge by the name of Steve Jones, who's been on the bench for over a decade now, former Superior Court judge in the state of Georgia, an appointee of Barack Obama. And said that this needs to go in front of the federal bench, so the federal bench can just dismiss this and let us go about our merry way. And don't think for a minute that because these cases are, as in the other cases, should it come to it, and say Meadows be indicted by Jack Smith, that he won't.
Yeah, but I was a member of the federal government. I was only following orders.
I wasn't there. I didn't do it. And even if I did do it, I was only following orders. Well, today, Fonnie Willis's office responded in a, because we always have to give the page count now, a 13-page response. And said, federal courts have repeatedly denied requests to interfere in state criminal prosecutions. Generally, only in cases of proven harassment or prosecutions taken in bad faith without hope of obtaining a valid conviction is federal intervention against pending state prosecutions appropriate. And not only that, Fonnie Willis said and twisted the knife, hey, these guys' boss has already agreed to come in and post bail and get their prints and pictures taken, and yeah. On the other hand, the aforementioned Kenneth Cheesebro is now insisting on a trial before the end of the year, which is even earlier than Fonnie Willis asked for, which is quite interesting. And I don't know what his reason is, but the former chair of the Georgia Maggot Party, one David Schaefer, said, yeah, I want my case in federal court too, okay? And Jeffrey Clark decided he was, you know, the best defense is a good is to be offensive, not a good offense, just to be offensive. And said,
my prosecution's politically motivated, and I shouldn't have to submit to these pissant state proceedings. And it's no fair. Because I'll have to arrange hasty travel to Atlanta if the federal court doesn't intervene.
Oh, poor baby, you're going to have to go to Atlanta? Well, maybe after you bond out, you can go to the varsity and get you a loaded chili dog all the way walking and some of the best onion rings you ever had in your life, Mr. Cheesebro, and a jumbo FO, honey. Responding, and you can hear the dripping sarcasm, Willis said, As inconvenient as modern air travel could admittedly be, whatever nuisance involved in the defendant securing a flight to Atlanta within the window provided is self-evidently insufficient justification to invoke this court's authority to enjoin a state felony criminal prosecution. I mean, for God's sakes, love it or hate it, Atlanta is a place you can get to quickly. I mean, it's not like you're flying to Duluth. I use that example because for some reason or another, flights in and out of Duluth seem to get canceled. I mean, you can get your flight canceled to Duluth for weather, for freezing weather in July. I'm being a little bit sarcastic, but yeah. Now this is Atlanta. I don't care if you're sitting in Seattle or Detroit or Pierre, South Dakota. You can get a flight to Atlanta when you've got 2 weeks' notice that you need to have one. Hell, you can get a flight to Atlanta when you've got 2 days' notice that you need one. Or a day. Thank God Almighty, every time I leave Jaeger Airport, now that's a 45-minute hop to Atlanta. It's either Atlanta or CLT. Occasionally, I don't know if we're still going to Dallas from Jaeger anymore. You can get a hop. You can get a crop duster to Washington D.C. There used to be a crop duster. One of those Saab turboprops. I've had some fun rides in those little bastards. You can get on an Embraer jet, you know. Maybe slightly bigger than the one that crashed with Evgeny Prigozhin aboard. Yeah, back to Evgeny Prigozhin for just a second. One of the first things that crossed my mind was, gee, I wonder if he was conscious when he got on the airplane. Well, you know, it's hard to tell if he was killed beforehand because, well, the body was all burned up in the fire from the crash. That's some Alfred Hitchcock stuff. But Willis wasn't done. She said, in essence, the defendant's emergency motion is a plea to this court to prevent the defendant from being arrested on the charges lawfully brought by the state of Georgia. Despite the defendant's attempts to characterize the request as a temporary pause, it is a request that the routine processing and handling of a criminal matter in the state system be dictated by federal authorities. Such a request is improper. And it is. And she just kept twisting the knife and said, look, gave him 2 weeks. That was a matter of professional courtesy. I was not obliged to provide. But I did, because I'm nice. Because in all truth, She could have asked the court to issue capiases for every blessed defendant in the case. That would have meant arrest warrants. That would have meant frog marching and handcuffs behind the back. And so U.S. District Judge Stephen Jones has set a hearing for Monday on the issue of moving the criminal case. One of them, I can't remember which, was a real asshole about it and said, hey, Your Honor, we want the court to rule before 5 o'clock on Friday. If I'm not mistaken, they made that filing at like 2:30 in the morning. And if she really wants to press the matter, Fonnie Willis can issue capias for both of those little rat fucks at 5:01 p.m. Friday afternoon. Personally, I kind of hope she does. I don't know the extent to which Jack Smith might be a joker in the deck here. Apparently, there is no agreement, at least as of yet, for Mark Meadows' cooperation and testimony. We shall see. And you can, well, I guess I'll be on the air tomorrow. I mean, if all things go according to plan, I'll be on the air tomorrow when Nitwit Nero turns himself in prime time. Brass. But when I was doing a little research on Steve C. Jones, the federal district judge who will hear the case on Monday, learned a little something. Georgia, which was notorious for disenfranchising some 309,000 voters a few years back, it turns out that Georgia has an expiration date on voter registrations. In the state of Georgia, if you don't vote in three years, the authorities can just simply remove your name from the voting rolls. And of course, they don't make it particularly easy to vote either. Eight other states in the union have laws that let voters be purged from the list if they're not active. And remember Brad Raffensperger? Yeah. The Georgia statute sets out a list of requirements in order to purge a voter, but Raffensperger was purging voters years before the legal deadline in legislation because of a prior statute. The things you learn, right? Well, I didn't know you had a dog in that fight, Emilio. Stop hating on Duluth, Robin. Matt in San Francisco. Evgeny Prigozhin. What happened to the plane? Oh. Wheel, the front fell off. Into the environment. Ah, there was no environment there. The front fell off. Apparently it's not supposed to make it jet aircraft out of cardboard. Yeah. Ooh, no wonder I'm sweating. We are at the top of the second hour. And it is a toasty 89 degrees in here. Whew! Air conditioner's going for all it's worth, but it's not doing diddly. Sometimes the poor thing just can't keep up. And I haven't said anything since the beginning of the program, so a little reminder. We are at... I want to be accurate here. Yeah. We are at 1435, fundraising-wise. Thanks to Norman, who did have a show on me. That means that we've got today, Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday, last Friday, and $235 of last Thursday. Thanks again so much, Norman. Thank you. And of course, as alluded to in yesterday's program, one of the critical Mar-a-Lago witnesses has in fact rolled on his boss. Referred to as Trump employee number 4, he was represented by a pettifogger that the Trump PAC was paying. And just as was the case with Cassidy Hutchinson, as soon as employee number 4 got real live, no kidding, counsel, and not a Trump ambulance chaser, he said, my previous testimony wasn't exactly truthful. And this is the guy who was in charge of the security cameras at Mar-a-Lago. And once he got competent counsel, and competent counsel had a chance to explain to him what, perjury means and what committing it could mean for his future hopes of being at his own liberty, he fessed up and said, yeah, the boss, that's what they call him down there, the boss, and Walt Nauta and De Oliveira had in fact done exactly what they were charged with. NBC News is saying it's Yusel Tavares. And all of this became known because Aileen Cannon, the Trump bot who has the case in South Florida, said, why come you're getting evidence from a D.C. grand jury? And Smith's team responded and said, well, the grand jury finished its work in D.C. on August the 17th, and Tavares blipped. And that's part and parcel of the reason for the superseding indictment that was filed late in the month of July. Curiously, Walt Nauta was represented by the same pettifogger as presumably Tavares, an ambulance chaser by the name of Stanley Woodward. Who may very well be conflicted out at this point. Responding to Aileen Cannon, Trump tool, Smith's team said, Advising Trump employee Ford to correct his sworn testimony would result in testimony incriminating Mr. Woodward's other client, Nauta, but permitting Trump employee Ford's false testimony to stand uncorrected would leave Trump employee Ford exposed to criminal charges for perjury. That's why. And it's Tavares who provided the information that he, when asked, said, the servers keep the video footage for 45 days. And in their filing, the special counsel said, the government anticipates calling Trump employee number four as a trial witness and expects that he will testify to conduct alleged in the superseding indictment regarding efforts to delete security footage. You know, obstruction of justice. And the pressure keeps building. And the heat keeps rising. And Matt's little bet. Remember, 2 months, wheelchair, plaid blanket, drooling, naked under the blanket. Matt's in for a toaster and a dozen bagels. And if, in fact, you win, Matt, I will see to it that those dozen bagels come from Essa Bagel in New York City. I'll probably have the cooperation of Steve in New York in that. Whew. Maybe I need to get one of those. Lou suggests maybe you could keep a whiteboard to keep track of which defendant flips when. Maybe listeners can guess on who flips next. Now, these are not all going to come with toasters and bagels. Oh, Matt, how many slots do you need? And of course, they have to be bagel wide, but we also need them sourdough long, so it'll continue to have usefulness. Will four slots be sufficient, or does this need to be one of those industrial toasters? Just curious. In other news, and by the way, the lines are open if you'd like to participate in what we like to call here Conversation Radio. I jump right in. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, or on Skype, Robin Kincaid Horn. Kincaid Horn is K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you've never called in on the Skype line, just send me a contact request. I'll approve it, and we'll be off and running. Well, thank you, Nipper. Nipper says Squidney Powell turned herself in today, too. And Jenna Ellis is still absolutely perplexed. Why for they no defend me no more? Well, that's okay. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and she's trusting Jesus. Oh, and thank you, Matt. Matt's fine with a four-slot toaster. My money's on Giuliani flipping. I know many say he won't, but he's kind of up a creek in all aspects. I didn't think he was up a creek in all aspects, Matt. I thought he was up a creek in a barbed wire canoe without a paddle. Sorry, couldn't help it. I don't hate to say I told you so, but, and it's not I told you so, it's more like we've been telling the world. The right-wing fascist infiltration of law enforcement and the military is far worse than most people even begin to comprehend. And so it is that we now find out via Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington that, you know, they're known as CREW. CREW has gotten hold of some emails. Those emails show in rather stark fashion. Imagine this. That members of the United States Secret Service have been in close contact with the leader of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes. You know, you'll shoot your eye out, Stuart Rhodes, and bang, then he did. As far back as September 2020, a member of the Secret Service sent an email to other members of the Secret Service and told him he'd just talked to Stuart Rhodes about a trip that Nitwit Nero was going to take to Fayetteville, North Carolina, home of Fort Not Bragg. Not only was the Secret Service agent in contact with Stuart Rhodes, he described himself as, and this is a quote, the unofficial liaison to the Oath Keepers, inching towards official. Now, the Oath Keepers are a hate group. They're a domestic terror organization. Why would the Secret Service, charged with the protection of the President of the United States, be liaising with this guy who has subsequently been convicted of felony seditious conspiracy in relation to his role in September the 6th, 2021? Or January 6th, sorry. I was stuck in September. And apparently the Secret Service agent had a fondness for the Oath Keepers. He described them benignly as primarily retired law enforcement, former military members who were very pro-law enforcement officer, and pro-Trump. Their stated purpose is to provide protection and medical attention to Trump supporters if they come under attack by leftist groups. In other words, if a gang of violent maggots shows up with chinos and polo shirts and tiki torches and anti-fascist people decide that they're And they start beating on anti-fascist people, and the anti-fascist people fight back, then the Oath Keepers are going to be there to intervene on the side of the maggots. Stuart Rhodes, he said, had specific questions and wanted to liaison with our personnel. And he gave out Stuart Rhodes' cell phone number to everybody on his email list. The only way we know about this is that CREW filed a Freedom of Information Act request, and, well, they got this. And to read the way CREW puts it, it's one of those tip of the iceberg things. The emails focus slowly on the... Reading, Robin, it's a thing. The emails focus solely on the time period around the Fayetteville event, the extent of the contact Stuart Rhodes had with the agency remains unknown. The agent inching towards being the official liaison for Oath Keepers suggests a more long-standing relationship with Rhodes. No, Ralphs, we do not know who this Secret Service agent is. Ralphs says, in my opinion, they need to be fired and gotten rid of ASAP. Then another Secret Service agent reaches out to Stuart Rhodes and comes back and tells other Secret Service agents that their desire is to assist those attending the event in Fayetteville, North Carolina, to make it to and from their cars safely. They're not there to demonstrate or push a political agenda. Oh, my sweet summer children! The Oath Keepers were nothing but a political agenda. But in a desperate attempt at ass covering, a Secret Service spokes creep told CNN,
the U.S. Secret Service doesn't have enough information to say whether or not this call actually took place.
Yeah, that was before the emails came out, and yeah, the calls took place. Secret Service agents went over and looked at their Facebook page and said,
it contains pro-gun content, commentary on racism in the U.S., and news articles about politics.
Commentary about racism in the U.S.? I'm pretty sure the Oath Keepers were not denouncing racism insofar as the Oath Keepers are decidedly racist. God almighty. Clean the damned organization out, top to bottom, root and branch. Yeah, they said they couldn't find anything else. As crew notes, it was in 2014. Damn, seems like so. Really? 9 years ago? When the Oath Keepers popped up in Ferguson, Missouri, claiming they were providing protection for local businesses. It was bad. Their presence was bad enough that even the local cops there had to get rather forceful, telling them to get the hell out of Ferguson. And political commentary. Some of that involved comparing Hillary Clinton to, oh, come on, you know, Hitler. Hitler! Hitlery! And the article goes on to note that the Oath Keepers claim that they're not white supremacists, but they sure do love hanging around with them. During his trial for seditious conspiracy, Stuart Rhodes, in fact, was described as being a really kind of envious fanboy of the Proud Boys. One hopes that he is Rhodes, having been sentenced to 18 years in May this past. I I hope he's already serving it. I hope he's not still wandering around out on bond like, oh, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. You know, Stevie Three Shirts. Secret Service Matt in San Francisco says, did they have a bake sale to raise money for the Oath Keepers? Should be a flyer somewhere. Would you be surprised, Matt? I would not be surprised. And as to Jenna Ellis, Matt says, she's been trusting Jesus this entire time. She should really find out his last name. He doesn't seem to be steering her right. Jesus, Garcia, Rodriguez. I don't. Might be the wrong Jesus. Ah, thank you. Jeremy in Vermont tells me, yes, Stuart Rhodes has begun his 18-year stint in the care, custody, and control of the United States Bureau of Prisons. I wonder if he got to keep his eye patch. Oh, God, Robin, that was just bitchy. Hey, Kim. Kim says, hi, Robin. Sorry for the Fox News link. Breaking news. Mark Meadows. Mark Meadows' emergency motion to prohibit the arrest, his arrest in Georgia 2020 election case has been denied. Because remember, Stephen C. Jones was going to have a hearing on Monday, but, well, they wanted a faster answer. Well, Jones said, nah, don't think so. There's not enough evidence amounting to proof to allow him to just move the case willy-nilly and for Fannie Willis to go right ahead with her prosecution up to and until the federal court says they have jurisdiction. In the order, the judge writes, while Meadows' imminent arrest may present an actual injury, there are strong countervailing reasons not to enjoin the state criminal proceedings. Thus, the court determines that the clear statutory language for removing a criminal prosecution does not support an injunction or temporary stay prohibiting District Attorney Willis's enforcement or execution of the arrest warrant against Meadows. And you know, just as a bit of an aside, I think if America actually pays attention, I think by definition we're not talking about the maggots, but if America generally pays attention to these prosecutions, they may actually wind up better for it, having learned a bit about how criminal justice is at least supposed to work in the United States. And by the way, the district court judge in administering the case in Fulton County has already entered an order saying, oh yeah, bring your cameras. You can bring cameras, you can bring laptops, you can bring still cameras, you can bring audio recording devices. This is going to be a transparent trial available for every American to see. And so Mark Meadows is probably having a very big sad. Or his pettifoggers are desperately trying to craft an emergency petition to the Supreme Court of the United States saying, no, please help! His pettifogger described the request as a modest extension of the Friday noon deadline.
We hope to be prepared to meet and confer immediately following the federal court hearing, which is scheduled for less than one business day after the current deadline, so we can discuss the best path forward based on the outcome of the hearing, including a prompt voluntary surrender in Fulton County, if appropriate.
Well, Marky Mark, I'm afraid you're going to have to be a little more prompt than you'd planned on. And I can't help wondering, having mentioned Cassidy Hutchinson, I wonder if she'll be a witness at all. Liz Cheney took to that platform owned by derpy Batman villain Leon Scum and said, you know, maybe people might want to, talking about Trump supporters, maybe they might want to actually go and read all the evidence that the January 6th committee published. Because the stuff that Trump is saying isn't true? Oh, dear God. Kim, take a gander at Jenna Ellis's mugshot. She must think she's taking a photo for Match.com. Oh, this is going to be beautiful. I have to go to a different platform for it. Sure, it's not only fans, Kim? Oh, yeah. That was probably cruel. Oh, that. That's just sweet Christian girl next door. Sure. Oh, John Eastman, on the other hand, he's leering at the camera like he ought to be wearing a raincoat. Not saying, just saying. Thank you, Kim. I really appreciate it. I mentioned the fact that it's a mite toasty here in the studio, inching towards 90. I'm not leaving the apartment today, Flavio says. La Crosse, Wisconsin, 102 degrees Fahrenheit. Real feel, 117 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the 39 with a real feel of 47 Celsius. That's got to be brutal. That's basically the same temperature my dear sister, Miss Terry, was giving a presentation in Montgomery, Alabama today. And that's basically the same temperature it was in Montgomery, Flavio. And that's every bit of, what, 1,200, 1,300 miles away? You know, your Wisconsin winters may not wind up being so awful anymore. And Duluth might not be so damned hard to fly into before long. Oh, and Matt adds, Jenna, smiling for your mugshot? She's giving blondes a bad name.
No, she's smiling because she knows Jesus is going to bail her out.
But another one of the dudes, I think this is one of the Georgia defendants, he's sitting there grinning like he's off to a pork pulling. And no, that's not that. No, that just really means pulled pork. That's not a euphemism. That's not some sort of filthy euphemism. But Rudy Giuliani's photo has a real "I'm gonna get you, sucker" vibe about it.
And, you know, over time we'll get so used to these photos because they're going to get a lot of they're going to get a lot of traffic, a lot of use in the media. I'm not sure who that one guy is, but he looks like Mr. Rogers if Mr. Rogers was clinically depressed and holding back some degree of really creepy rage. And apparently there's a filter out there, you know, it's the Alien Finder filter. And somebody ran it on all these mugshots, and John Eastman's face turned green, which means that, you know, John Eastman's an alien. Well, hey, thank you, Dave and the Blind. Actually, this is on behalf of Christine. Give her the credit for this one-time contribution. Thank you. So that means we're down to 1425. 1425. If we were to raise $225, we'd have one more day from last week fully funded. Well, Dave, please tell Christine we say thank you. Send our love. Yeah, not wrong, Matt. The Cheeseboro mugshot, I wouldn't leave him alone with a teenager. Matt, I don't disagree. But by the same token, I also wouldn't leave him alone with a carcass of a dead possum. Thank you, Ralphs. We're down to $1,400. Thank you so much. It's wonderful. Yeah, Christopher. Christopher writes in 120, 102 degrees in Cheeseland. Holy cow, Flavio. Wait a minute. Cheeseland, holy cow. How the hell are you keeping all that beer and cheese cold up there? Have a lot of spotted cow on my hand, my friend. Oh, and by the way, Packers are going to be terrible this season, and the Angels will sing from the highest clouds. Christopher is a Bears fan. Which reminds me, did you catch the Colts-Bears preseason game? I think I mentioned it the other day. It just tickled my heart that one of the QBs who got a few reps for the Bears, last name is Bajent. Son of a gun. Reminded me of my buddy, gone these many years now, gone far too soon, Joe Bajent. And the name was pronounced the same way. Kind of wonder if he's kinfolks. And if he is, I hope he's a damn good lefty. You look at all of this madness, you know, Joe Bajent left us before Trump ever got anywhere near office. And it's one of those moments where you go, oh, God, it would be so nice if you'd been around for all this. When did... My goodness gracious. Joe left us in March of 2011. And you know what? His book, Deer Hunting with Jesus, Dispatches from America's Class War. That was 2007, 16 years ago. And somehow or another, it still manages to remain fresh. And in fact, when you read it, it's almost like you can see the you can see the protoplasmic bubblings of what would become the maggots. Our buddy Reverbo and I were talking the other day, and Reverbo actually got to meet Joe Bajenty. Met him. Met him down in Mexico. Meanwhile, Flavio, your neighbor Jessica over in the greater metropolitan Rochester co-prosperity sphere said, "Damn it, Robin! When I said I wanted to be a hot chick, this isn't what I was talking about. It's 98 degrees in the greater Rochester metropolitan co-prosperity sphere, although it feels like a 108. This 5'9", 219-pound G-cup Scandinavian Valkyrie was not made for this heat. My lineage comes from the land of ice and snow, from the frozen north where the hot springs flow." Ah! No singing. Well, that wasn't really singing. That was more like bad yodeling. Jessica says, "But I'm going to stream you on the commute home, so at least we'll have that bit of happiness today. Hope you're staying relatively cool, Robin." At the risk of losing the entire audience, we're down to Bikini Radio this afternoon. There's no way of working in humid 90 degrees in this studio with south and east facing windows and hope. I'm mopping sweat, okay? That's all. I'm mopping sweat. But you... That's just wild to me. Alabama heat in Wisconsin and Minnesota. But of course, right?
Chinese hoax. Definitely a Chinese hoax.
Now, Matt tells us, according to betonline.ag, you can bet on Trump's recorded weight with the line current... Oh my God, the line currently sitting at over under... Wait. And you know, the bookies will move the line based on the betting to keep the money right, because the house always wins. BetOnline has the line currently sitting with an over-under of 278.5 pounds. I don't know which way I'd bet. Y'all? Over under 278.5 pounds. Taking the under almost seems like a sucker's bet. But if you take the over, you immediately have to ask the question, how's he still alive? I mean, if he was, you know, 6'10 and 278, he might be svelte. In the last 3 years, I've probably shrunk an inch and a half. But there's no way that guy's much taller than me. All right, who's got the over? Who's got the under? Ralph says, "I know I'm being petty, but I hope Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets lose big." Yes, and I want Aaron Rodgers to get the view of the clouds. from the inside of the Meadowlands there, from flat on his back, as often as possible. I'm going to be really disappointed if the Jets don't suck. Oh, Brendan. Brendan. Stuart Rhodes, subject line. Stuart Rhodes, eye hole. Hi, Robin. Hi, Brendan. I'm trying so hard to suppress my inner gutter snipe, but I can't. If they don't let Rhodes wear his eye patch, do you think he'll get skull fucked in the shower for cigarettes? Peace, lady. Brendan. Oh, Brendan. That's restaurant quality. That's top shelf. That's Lewis Gossett. Skull fuck you to death. Ooh! Officer and a Gentleman, remember? It was Officer and a Gentleman, wasn't it? The cowbell was kind of her inner gutter snipe. Brendan, let your gutter snipe free. Let your gutter snipe flag fly proudly. I mean, we get to say things like this, don't we? Stuart Rhodes actively participated in an attempt to overturn the government of the United States of America. As far as I'm concerned, 18 years in the federal stir was pretty damn merciful. He could have and should have gotten worse. There's been a lot said over the course of nearly 20 years on this program, but Brendan, I think you just made your way into the top 10. I sincerely do. Ralphs is impressed too. Oh my God, Brendan. Yeah. And you know what? It's the in the shower for cigarettes part that makes it art. It really is. Well, we're past halfway through the program. I'm just checking the live updates here real quick, because it's live. ABC leading with the denial of his motion, Mark Meadows' motion. The second story being Kenneth Cheesebro. Hey, Cheesebro, you got a cracker? And imagine, these people thought they were at the absolute pinnacle of American political power. This was going to catapult them into the history books and, well, via graft and corruption, into the life to which they hoped to become accustomed, and now it's an entirely different life to which they may become accustomed. But a former Georgia prosecutor, according to ABC News, Chris Timmons, who is an expert on the Georgia RICO statute, says that when it, and this is generally true, I don't think it's just Georgia specific, when a defendant files a speedy trial demand, they have to be tried within a certain amount of time or they get acquitted as a matter of law. And so Kenneth Cheesebro said, he does not have to take, Fonnie Willis does not have to take me home and shoot me later. She can shoot me now. Try me now! because he has filed a speedy trial request and has asked for a date that is even earlier than what Jack Smith has asked for. He wants to be tried before the end of the year. Former prosecutor Timmons said, "We used to view speedy trial requests as a declaration of war. It means you're ready to go now." I have a feeling it's not going to intimidate Jack Smith. Well, hey, thank you. Thank you to our dear friend of long standing, David in South Carolina, Stan. Unfortunate, evil story coming out of South Carolina, Stan. Hope to get to it. Oh, let's just do it now. The five men who sit on the South Carolina Supreme Court declared today that, no, by God, the little women folk have no right to control the workings of their reproductive systems, and that they, five men, know better about a process which they will never experience than the women folk do. Y'all just sit down now, you understand, darling? We'll tell you what you need, and what you need is to carry that there baby to term. Now, if you done been raped, and you go to the police about it, and you do it before 12 weeks, you might get an abortion then, honey, but not a minute after. Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you so much, David. We are down to 1350. $13.50 to try to catch up. $150 and we're done with, let's see. We'll be done with Thursday of last week. Thank you, David. I hope you're well. It's great to hear from you. Back to the mugshots for a minute, because I'm just upset. Squidney Powell has to know that they're all going to dump on her because, well, she's an idiot. And she's got a bemused look on her face. What? There's Grinagina. Oh, the guy who looks like Mr. Rogers on a heavy dose of benzodiazepines. That's Kenneth Cheesebro. There we go. The guy you, I think the guy you said you wouldn't trust around little children, and I said I wouldn't trust around a dead possum, that would be Ray Smith. And Scott Hall, he made sure to show up for his mugshot with his American flag Jesus cross on his lapel. Kathy Latham's wide-eyed with wonder. What? But she wore her best paisley blouse. You know, this could become a gambling show real quick this evening. Okay, how many people think that Nitwit Nero will be flashing his most winning smile, as opposed to how many of us think that he'll be giving that stern fascist scowl, you know, that chin jutting out all Mussolini-like? Takers? Any takers? This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, so from the Day Late and Dollar Short department, Owen Strahan is a Southern Baptist Seminary professor. This from Religion News Service. And he's an anti-woke activist. By the way, there's a drinking game out there. If you sit down with a bottle of Mexican gasoline and a shot glass, and you take a shot every time somebody says, woke, I don't think you'll make it through the first 20 minutes of this pageant this evening. Anyway, Owen Strahan has been saying that the liberals are ruining American evangelical Christian churches. And yet, suddenly, he's having a bit of an about-face. Owen Strahan is now saying that mono-ethnic Christian nationalism is the new threat to evangelical Christianity. And by mono-ethnic, he means European-American. And defines Christian nationalism as the unbiblical view that we must preserve white ethnicity to build a Christian nation. And he says it's gotten a foothold in what is called the Reformed wing of the Evangelical Church. Tell me more about this Reformation, because I don't remember any drunk monks nailing any theses. I said theses to the church door. And lo and behold, Strahan has taken dead aim at Andrew Torba, who runs Gab. And he's even calling out the guy who describes himself as a theocratic fascist, Matt Walsh, the man who inspired, Trevor Ikiguchi, who killed the woman in Lake Arrowhead, California, in San Bernardino County, over the weekend. He's calling them both out and said, by the minute, we're smoking out white nationalism, godless ethnocentrism in Christian circles. By grace, we will fight this wicked ideology. He's the provost of Grace Bible Theological Seminary. It's a little gospel-sharp school in Arkansas, Stan. And for a while there, he was terribly popular for a book he wrote called Christianity and Wokeness. But now he's decided he's gonna do a bit of a pivot. And has suddenly noticed the racism and the anti-Semitism that bounces around in white nationalist so-called Christian circles. This is kind of a surprise to me because, you know, I've only been saying for 20 years that I can, you know, the people who are not subscribers to this ideology can't fix it. It can only be fixed from within. And that the only hope that the Christian church has is if they start calling out people and saying, you fucks are not Christian, and Jesus, on the great day of judgment, Jesus is going to pinch your heads off, hey Malloy, and throw them into hell for the imps and demons to use as soccer balls. And I guess the last straw for Owen Strahan was Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh. Oh, by the way, Owen Strahan's worried about the white ethno-national Christian nationalism and the anti-Semitism and the racism and the Islamophobia. Still no word on the homophobia and the transphobia, though. I mean, don't get too excited. But the straw that broke the camel's back was Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh saying, talking about how,
White Americans need to have more children to save the country from outsiders.
I don't know, Matt Walsh. As far as I can tell, we've had to limit women's right to control their reproductive systems, and y'all are breeding for all you're worth because apparently we don't have enough children in America to shoot in school anymore. Evil bastards. This guy is still the former president of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. And they preach that
men and women have different roles in the family and society, and men can't do women things, and women can't do the men things.
And I'm going to have to read up more on this because he, the article mentions stark Calvinist theology and dark-suited, bespectacled, and bearded pastors often tagged by evangelical insiders as Theo Bros. Sorry, Theo, that's not you. Greek, Theo, God, yeah. But there are still apologists like Douglas Wilson of Christ Church, who actually wrote a blurb for the aforementioned Andrew Torba, who wants lots of white babies.
He said, I see guys flirting with something I don't want them flirting with. You can have an ethnic affection for your people. The problem would come when you mandate or say we're going to discipline you or come down on you hard if you marry outside the tribe.
You know, this is speculation on so many angels dancing on the head of a pin. Christianity's a lot easier if you just kind of stick to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 25. It's pretty simple. Try not to shit on the people around you, and they might not shit on you. Oh, and out of Texas, this. Again, because prayer meeting Wednesday. Coming up on the third hour of the program. And y'all, it's hot in here. Sorry, I'm not complaining. Well, I'm kind of complaining. The monastery, again, Fort Worth, or Texas. The Monastery of the Most Holy Trinity of the Discalced Carmelite Nuns has declared that they no longer recognize the authority of a bishop from Fort Worth, Bishop Michael Olson. And they say that he is banned from the property in Arlington. And they say they banned him for the as a result of their need for spiritual safety. Well, good for you, ladies. You probably aren't safe around him. And, you know, neither 9-year-old little boys. The bishop went after one of the nuns and said, accused her of, and this is Reverend Mother Teresa Agnes Gerlach. He said that she had made the ficky fic with a priest. And she filed a civil defamation suit against him. Come on, let's you and them fight. And then he dismissed Reverend Mother Gerlach. And issuing a statement, the Most Holy Trinity of the Discalced Carmelite Nuns said, he's engaged in unprecedented interference, intimidation, aggression, private and public humiliation, and spiritual manipulation. No one who abuses us as has the current Bishop of Fort Worth has any right to our cooperation or obedience. For our own spiritual and psychological safety and in justice, we must remain independent of this bishop until such time as he repents of the abuse to which he has subjected us, apologizes in person to our community for it, and accepts to make due public reparation. The Catholic Diocese of Fort Worth said,
"Oh, this is dangerously rebellious decision. Please, everybody, pray that the little ladies will quit being so openly disobedient, so the bishop can get back to."
Well, you know, the perversion never ends. And it's a big enough story that the Fort Worth Star-Telegram has been covering it in detail. And by the way, Reverend Mother Gerlach, who is 43 years old, wants $1 million out of Bishop Olson and his diocese. I'm sorry, I can't help but be reminded of the old joke. The Pope at Rome doesn't respect the authority, recognize the authority of the Greek Orthodox Patriarch. Protestants don't recognize the authority of the Pope at Rome, and Baptist deacons don't recognize each other in the liquor store. The Diocese,
Bishop Olson asked the faithful of the Diocese of Fort Worth and all people of goodwill to pray for the Carmelites that they'll stop their open disobedience. Bishop Olson and the Diocese of Fort Worth stand with Pope Francis and will remain faithful to the canonical process that is currently underway.
In other words, we're about to have the shit sued out of us in a United States constitutional court, and we don't want to pay. Unfortunately, the Tarrant County judge did dismiss the court, saying, "I don't have any jurisdiction in a church matter." So, hold on. The libel and slander and defamation laws of the state of Texas do not apply inside the Roman Catholic or any other church. What? Well, I've learned a new word, discalced. The discalced Carmelite nuns? Thank you, Flavio. Discalced equals barefoot, Flavio adds. And pregnant. Thank you. Oh, this Olson. He must be a nasty one. I don't think anybody's going to take the over-under on that. Nitwit Nero's mugshot. Darlene in Connecticut says he'll insist on several retakes. The best mugshot, though, was Barbie's.
Nah.
Ralph says Trump will scowl with his huge wrinkled chin. Did you mean chins, chins, multiple chins? That man's got more chins than a Beijing phone book. Fuck it, I'm giving myself a cowbell for that. Oh, I had another one. This was gross, too. This is... hold on, I'm sorry. This is worth it to find. It's from the That Took Some Brass department on... yeah, there it is. Yeah. Once again, we're at play in the sacred precinct of the Roman Catholic Church. According to an article in The Guardian, former father, Lawrence Hecker, was questioned by reporters about something that he said to church leaders in New Orleans in 1999, where he said, well, yes, I committed overtly sexual acts with at least three underage boys in the 1960s and 1970s, and I had close relationships with four other boys that lasted until the 1980s.
Groomer!
Also, not trans. And the Guardian article said, asked if he did the specific sexual acts he laid out in the statement, Hecker twice said, yes, while he was being recorded on video. But he also said, well, you know, society was more permissive about doing things like that back then. As The Guardian notes, the age of consent in Louisiana has not changed from 1960 to 2023. It remains 17. They went ahead and asked former Father Hecker if he should be charged for all the sex crimes he committed with the little boys.
And he said, oh, I just don't know. Not one chance in a million anything like this would ever happen again. Obviously, I'm truly repentant.
How is this outfit still a going concern? I wonder if it's okay to sue the church in Louisiana Stan. It's apparently problematic in Texas. And the Texas thing goes back a ways. there was a case many years ago, back at the very beginnings of the program, where a girl was held down in, and this was not a Catholic church, this was more the snake handling variety, I think, maybe a one of those Baptist offshoots, hard shell, soft shell, I don't know. But she was held down and violently restrained for purposes of casting demons out of her, which were apparently making her rebellious and mouthy. Because, you know, no teenage girl has ever been rebellious and mouthy without a demon being in them. And the Texas court said, sorry, hon, you can't sue the church. That would violate the First Amendment rights of the church. You, Missy? Rights? You? Get out. So the question is, where's the prosecuting attorney in New Orleans? And God, how the hell many counts would there be? Overtly sexual acts with at least three underage boys in the late 1960s and 1970s, and then whatever it is that he defines as close relationships with four others. How close, father? Too close. Good Lord. The evil that permeates that outfit. Well, he's 91. I mean, wouldn't want him to die in prison or anything. Yes, we would. And, of course, there's always a bishop somewhere. He persuaded, in 1988, the prior Archbishop of New Orleans that he would never, ever be in any such circumstances again. And so the church and law enforcement authorities said they wouldn't punish him. His abuses ran from 1966 until 1979. And even after the conversation with the Archbishop, they let him go on being a priest. Finally, in 1999, the Archdiocese sent him off to an out-of-state psych hospital, who sent a report back saying, oh yeah, he's a pedophile. Everything in the report was kept secret, especially from his victims. Nonetheless, in the year 2000, 23 years ago, when he was, let's see, 8, when he was 68 years old, you know, about Trump's age. Or, what am I thinking? I just euthaned Nitwit Nero. No, when he was 68 years old. You know, the Archdiocese put him in charge of a church that had an elementary school with it. They hastily let him retire after the Archdiocese of Boston got busted. And he blamed his pedophilia on the sexual liberation of the 1960s. Oh, my God.
Well, we didn't know then what we know now. It all took place during a sexual revolution. People were saying, oh, look, We were bound all these years, all these centuries, and now we're free.
Yeah, because, you know, Father Hacker was 1,000 years old. There's the old joke out there. No, I'm not going to tell it. It might be triggering. Bottom line is the diocese over about 10 years, starting 13 years ago, paid out the pissant sum of $332,500 for out-of-court settlements on 5 complaints during that same time frame. That was just Father Hecker. During that same time frame, the Archdiocese paid out $11.6 million. You think the church, does the church have, I sincerely don't know, does the church have a sexual abuse insurance policy? Is there an insurance company that ponies up the money when the priests are caught fucking the kids? But no, the New Orleans DA is actively investigating the 90-year-old pedophile. Pedos. Oh, don't worry. You'll never hear that. You'll never hear about this story on any right-wing radio, right-wing podcast, right-wing TV network. This will never make Newsmuck or Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. One of his victims says that he was underage when Father Hecker choked him unconscious and then raped him.
Well, then Hecker said, "I didn't choke and rape anybody."
Well, now that was nauseating, wasn't it? Ooh, that does look like a nice diversion, Dave, number 11. Always been a big fan of 10cc and Godly and Cream. Okay, Randy Radar. Randy Radar says, I'm partial to the discalced butterscotch nuns. Oh, and I mentioned Doug Burgum, who probably won't be in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee this evening. The way the headline is written reminded me of an old George Carlin bit back when he used to do the news before he became even hipper than he eventually became. Freak accident in San Francisco today as 10 freaks in a van collided with 30 freaks in a converted school bus. Headline reads, Freak basketball accident puts Republican candidate in ER ahead of presidential debate. Well, Governor Burgum, maybe you shouldn't be playing basketball with the freaks. He was taken to a Milwaukee emergency room Tuesday after suffering an injury while playing a game of pickup basketball with his staff and suffered an injury to his leg. By the way, somehow or another, he made it onto the debate stage with all of 0.4% of Republican voter support. freak basketball accent.
Here!
It was a rough weekend last weekend for Marginal Trailer Queen. She and her current squeeze, Brian Glenn of Right Side Broadcasting, done went to the Iowegia State Fair. What I'm about to convey is going to just tickle Billable Rick Pink. They went to the Iowa State Fair to talk about how much they love Donald Trump. And how they're going to support him all the way in 2024. And they posed with some children wearing maggot hats. What the hell's wrong with those parents that they would let any child anywhere near? Well, wait a minute, they're Republicans at the Iowegia State Fair. But while they were posing, some of the grown-ups in the room flipped them the bird and stuck their tongues out at them. Still no reports of anyone throwing footwear. More's the pity. And dipshit Brian Glenn, who is identified as program director for Right Side Broadcasting, posted the picture of him and Marge with the kids online before he noticed that there were a bunch of adults flipping him off. He said, "These kids screamed, 'We love MAGA Trump 2024. They were so happy. Then I noticed this afterwards. Classless trash. And photobombing Marge and photobombing her and Brian. It might become a thing. This past June in Cobb County, Georgia, somebody stood up in the room and flipped her off there, too. Yeah, well, there's some great voter outreach for you.
Yeah, Marge, ask your main squeeze to please not call my voters classless trash. I mean, we all know they are. But it's probably best not said.
Oh, Doug Burgum. Flavio says, you know, he seemed pretty reasonable during the pandemic, begging people not to politicize masks and vaccines. He actually urged people to social distance, wash their hands, wear masks, get the shots.
Sigh.
But at the end of the day, they're all maggots, Flavio. And at the end of the day, they all parrot the same bullshit talking points that they know work with the people who mouth walk and knuckle breathe and pick their teeth with their toenail clippings. And you may have noticed the story. I'm just kind of all over the place this evening, trying to hit all the high points. Kind of dealing with some Trump fatigue, I think. But you may have noticed the story where the leadership of South Korea and Japan had a historic meeting with President Biden at Camp David. I mean, talk about fucking up a spare. South Korea and Japan agreed, even though there's a lot of bad blood left over still from the Japanese rape of what was then a single Korea, and Japan's kidnapping of Korean women as comfort girls for the Japanese military. Sounds like something Andrew Tate would be into. Never mind. Well, they agreed that they would share information back and forth and have an open line of communication about, oh, for instance, North Korea and China. It was a historic step forward, and then the South Korean president, Yoon Suk-yeol, said that the South Korean government has no problems with a plan advanced by Japan to, nuclear radiation, the gift that keeps on giving. Japan's plan to release water from Fukushima. And protests have erupted in South Korea. The South Korean president is a conservative, and the Democratic Party leader, Lee Jae-myung, said, "We intend to hold the Yoon government responsible for failing to do its duties." And went on to say that Japan releasing water from Fukushima is a terror act. Because, see, this is the thing. Japan wants to begin releasing tomorrow, probably, you know, given international daylight, now. They want to release 1 million metric tons of radioactive water that's been treated and the South Koreans are understandably nervous about the effect on seafood and the contamination of the ocean generally. ...62% of people surveyed in South Korea said, yeah, once they let the water out, we're either going to cut back or we're just going to stop consuming seafood. And all the time, the conservative South Korean government's going, no, it'll be great. President Yoon, can I introduce you to Christy Todd Whitman, former governor of the state of New Jersey and also EPA administrator under George W. Bush? The dust wasn't even clear from 9/11 when she said, oh no, y'all, breathe it all in. It's safe to breathe. Nah, it's cool. It's fine. Won't hurt you. And people are, you know, 22 years later, people are still dying from that shit. The South Korean foreign minister, Park Jin, said, hey, what are we worried about? The water's going to go into the Pacific. It's going to go all the way along the Pacific Rim. It'll go along the American coast before it ever loops back to South Korea in 4 years. And by then, it won't have any, it'll have less radioactive tritium in it than normal seawater. Act in haste, repent in leisure. Japan says the water's safe. Thing is, if the water's safe, why do you need to release it into the ocean? The International Atomic Energy Agency said, it'll be fine. Any impact on people and the environment is negligible. That's not the same as saying any impact on the environment and people is non-existent. It just means it won't affect any people that the IAEA actually gives a fuck about. China, on the other hand, said, oh, no, no, this is extremely selfish. And called the Japanese ambassador on the carpet to protest. The aforementioned Democratic Party of South Korea held a candlelight vigil. And they'll be marching on the presidential office today. They have a public rally on Saturday. At the Democratic Party meeting, Lee said, Japan is about to bring irreversible calamity to South Korea and Pacific Rim countries with the release of radioactive contaminated water. And the Koreans are pissed. And I can't help thinking that they've got a right to be. Yeah, don't worry. We'll poison a lot of other people before it ever gets to South Korea. Oh, and the last time we heard of Dr. Ronnie Candyman Jackson... Oh, wait. Flavio says the Japanese fishermen are up in arms as well. They say that if the government releases that water, that'll spell the end of their livelihoods. Nobody will want to buy seafood with tritium. Can't imagine it's going to be particularly good for the sushi industry. No, like I said, the last time we heard of Dr. Representative Ronnie the Candyman Jackson, he was getting taken down to the ground by a Texas state trooper for not getting out of the way when a rodeo goer was in extremis. Candyman went on the War Room podcast hosted by the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts, where he issued his own ransom demand for the funding of the government of the people of the United States. And he said, well, let's just check in with the audio. Get the hockey puck. This guy's been doing too much of his own product.
You know, the Freedom Caucus is looking at overall spending and spending caps from, you know, stuff that was in part of the debt ceiling negotiations that they're trying to go back on now. They're talking about they won't sign a CR. I was the one that came out and specifically said that I will not basically vote for a continuing resolution unless it has some kind of impact on the DOJ and the FBI and the way that they've gone rogue over the last couple of years in coming after, or even more than that, it's been 3 or 4 years where they've been coming after American citizens for political reasons.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years. But they weren't going rogue when James Comey announced a new investigation into her laptop a month before the 2016 presidential election. There was nothing rogue about the FBI putting its thumb on the scale with regard to Hillary.
That was just patriotic.
And I just think the DOJ is too big now. They've obviously got too many people. They've got too much time on their hands. I just jot a few things down here. You know, if they've got time to collude with social media to influence elections, they've got too much time and too much money on their hands. If they've got time to come after Catholics and parents as domestic terrorists, if they've got time to endlessly pursue these J6 misdemeanors and prosecute them like they're felonies, denying bail and putting people in solitary confinement.
Prosecuting misdemeanors like they're felonies. What about the felonies they're prosecuting like felonies, Candyman? This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
They've got too much time. If they've got time to spend every waking hour trying to keep Trump from running again, which is what they're doing, time to cover up the abundant crimes of the Biden family, including bribes from our adversaries and our enemies, and time to sue Texas for doing the government's job of securing our border. This is an organization who has lost their way.
Organization.
They are not doing what they're paid to do, what they're supposed to be paid to do anymore. They've become a political tool. They've become the secret police of the Biden administration.
Shall we take a guess? This guy is not on diazepines. This guy is not on downers. Did he pick up Nitwit Nero's Adderall habit? If he goes any faster, he's going to sound like a fucking auctioneer.
And they're coming after average Americans for political reasons. This has to stop. And, you know, the only way that we have to stop it right now is to use the purse strings that we have in the House of Representatives and to choke off some of the money that's going to DOJ.
Breathe, you little bastard. You're going to turn blue and pass out.
And send a definitive message to them that we will not put up with this anymore. They will go back to doing the job that they're paid to do in protecting all Americans, and or else they will not be funded anymore. And you know, they certainly don't need a new FBI headquarters. I mean, it's ridiculous right now that we're going to spend billions of dollars giving the FBI a new headquarters right now. They don't need money for DEI. They don't need money for their climate initiatives. They don't need money for their Second Amendment programs that they have out there to take our Second Amendment away from them. There are so many things that this DOJ is doing right now that needs to be stopped. And I just want to be part of the process of stopping this. And I think we have an opportunity right now to stop part of it and to send a message to them. And that's why I took the stance I did. The problem with the FBI and the DOJ is
I thought he was done.
It's about becoming a political weapon for one side versus the other. It's about prosecuting and persecuting your political adversaries. That is not law and order. That is the Soviet Union, right? And so
communism.
We have to stop this, and you know, and I'm all of it. I know that there are a lot of good, hardworking, meaning people that work in the DOJ and the FBI that are well-meaning, that are trying to do their job, that want to protect the American people.
You know, like and the Secret Service too, or are they whatever, the Secret Service. You know, they're good people. They're sympathetic. They're sympathetic to the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. Might be worth remembering here that, in point of fact, the upper executive staff of the FBI had to reach out to field offices after January 6th and say, no, this was not legit. No one's doing anything to Trump. Because apparently there was a significant maggot infestation. Maybe, well, it's like Matt said, DOJ. If they got time to catch us being criminals, then they got too much time on their hands. Where's my mirror? Have you seen my razor blade? Matt's stacking up the cowbells this evening.
People that want to basically be a part of that establishing law and order, but there are a lot of people at the top and a lot of people in middle management right now. The deep state is real. I know it. You know it. We've both lived through it. These people are not pure in their intentions anymore, and they are not a law.
Tell us about the pizza place, Ronnie. Tell us about Q. Tell us about Adenochrome. The Jewish space lasers. Tell us everything, Ronnie.
Enforcement agency anymore. They are a political arm of the Biden administration, and that's what needs to stop. With regards to bread and butter law enforcement all over this country, the more we have, the better.
It took 3 minutes, and I mean, I interrupted a couple of times here and there. That's 3 minutes and 21 seconds of speaking without a break. Now, here, I talk for 3 hours a night sometimes. This is going to be one evening, afternoon, whatever. This is going to be one of those instances. Yeah, and I take some pregnant pauses. But 3 minutes and 21 seconds of uninterrupted drug-addled blather? I just have to think there's a... I'm with Matt. There's a mirror and a razor blade. And either a rolled-up $100 bill or a little sliced-off McDonald's drinking straw. You can't do that. I mean, that ain't too much Starbucks. And I guess the folks back there in the district are just as jacked as he is. Because they actually sent they sent him to Congress. Oh well. Emilio,
deep dish. I mean deep state. John Podesta, Vince Foster.
He's not okay. And you know what's worse? Okay, we're just going to do a snippet of this because the man who... Did he shave? No way. Okay, Matt. Pregnant pauses? To be fair, Robin, some of these pauses are college age. I earned that one. But just by comparison, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells... is going to talk now. Compare that with Dr. Speed over here.
Do you believe that the leadership, McCarthy, will listen to the constituents?
And this is the good part. They're going to talk about the weaker speaker, the man with the spine of silly putty.
Of these states with congressmen like yourself and saying, we can't do this anymore. It's got to stop and force Biden's hand to shut down. You're not shutting down the government. You force Biden's hand to shut down his government. Do you think the leadership has the stones to have your back?
I swear if he opens up.
Well, I hope so. They've got a 5-seat majority right now. They're going to need us, and there are more than 5 of us that are upset about some of the stuff that's going on right now that are making, you know, for lack of a better word, demands on the process, you know, because this is not the way it's supposed to work. Steve, we're supposed to pass these, you know, these appropriations bills. We're supposed to do things the right way. Why do we get ourselves in this situation?
You know, we were talking the other day about, it was that bad headline. What was it, earlier this week or maybe Friday? Where we talked about the value of commas and punctuation, the occasional semicolon. I pity any poor transcriptionist who has to insert punctuation in here. This is just a stream of word vomit.
Every time where we have a continuing resolution, kick the can down the road to the end of the year and then pass an omnibus that funds the government at some ridiculous level. That's what happened last time. That's not going to happen this time. McCarthy's going to have to listen to the people on the right, or else he's going to have to rely on the Democrats to pass this. And, you know, they could do that. They did that with the debt ceiling. The more Democrats voted for the debt ceiling than Republicans, they could go down that path again. But I'm telling you, if that happens, I mean, it's gonna be detrimental to leadership in the House if they blow off the concerns of the people like myself and Freedom Caucus and some of the.
You know, I mean, we've already gelded Kevin McCarthy. What's next? Need to get a rope.
The other people on the right that are making reasonable demands in this process, it's going to be a problem.
When you say a problem, are you guys prepared if he goes to Hakeem Jeffries again and really gives Hakeem Jeffries makes him essentially the majority leader? Are you prepared to then move on a motion to vacate to remove McCarthy as speaker?
Steve, I'm going to be honest with you. I think that's inevitable if we continue to rely on the Democrats to pass this important legislation that's coming out.
Candyman, do that. because they will gut the entire Republican leadership doing that. They'll even lose Marge. What are they going to do? Make Andy Biggs the Speaker of the House? Where are the votes for that going to come from, genius? Please, though. Come on. Let's you and him fight. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. And, of course, there are more than five, pretty sure, there are more than five members of the Republican majority, such as it is. Stay off the damn bicycles! Who won their races in districts that Joe Biden won. And they're gone if they pull this shit. They're just gone. They will not survive November 2024. So, please, rodeo boy, bring it. Steve Scalise, and he's not exactly the brightest bulb in the toaster, he's going to love you. And the rest of the Republican leadership, they're going to adore you. And your name's going to be mud once y'all are in the minority. Girl can dream, right? Please? Yeah. And hey, thank you to Texas T. We are down to 1340 now. Thank you. Of course, you know, Candyman Jackson represents the 13th Congressional District of Texas. I'm not exactly sure where that is, but I'm pretty sure I know what the voters there pick their teeth with. Or at least a majority of them. Thanks, Texas T. Yes, you're absolutely right, Cynthia. Cynthia in the Bay Area. Machine gun shit! And I was trying to take a nap here, but with that crap spewing out of their pie holes, who can? Machine gun shit. Yeah, there I was. I almost had you entirely, you know, in REM sleep. And then I had to do that. I should be ashamed of myself. But unless this is all Macbeth, you know, full of sound and fury signifying nothing, then they may squabble themselves into a hole in the ground. Ah, the Texas 13th Congressional District. Thank you to Ralphs, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc 13th Congressional District Research Department. Well, that's gerrymandered all the fuck. It includes Amarillo and Canyon, Texas, and Childress and Wichita Falls and Borger and Dalhart and my particular favorite community in the 13th Congressional District. Dumbass. I mean, it's spelled D-U-M-A-S, but come on. Dumbass taxes. Yeah, Wikipedia says it includes most of the Texas Panhandle, parts of Texoma, and northwestern parts of North Texas, Amarillo, Gainesville, and Wichita Falls. I always loved the Pat Metheny Group album. As Falls Wichita, So Falls Wichita Falls. It's a great album. wonderful song on there called, I think, what was it, Are You Going With Me? Billable Rick says, I'll take the under. 278.5 pounds. Hard to believe he's that hefty. Well, hell, Rick, it's hard to believe a word that comes out of his mouth. And yeah, I think I'm staying out of this one. But take the under. Remember, though, there's always a chance that they'll take his word for his weight. And I find it funny that in the other in the other criminal cases, they've just agreed to use one of his publicity photos for his mugshot. No, I want the real deal here. Just once, we deserve to know something smelling of the truth. And tell him it'll the booking deputy there can tell him it'll might take a couple of pounds off if they weigh him without his shoes on. What'll be funny is if they make him empty his pockets. We find out he doesn't even have so much as a damn dime in him. Oh, Matt, Dr. Jackson. I'm pretty sure he and I were searching for freebase rocks in the carpet and smoking lint in the mid-80s. In the early 80s, when I was at WVU, some witty and creative and enterprising young student, I think it was summer of 84, maybe, did up a T-shirt that said, I survived the great dry spell, WVU, 1984. And on the back it said, I suggest we shake out the carpet. Must have been nationwide that year, Matt. Yes, you should, says Cynthia. Oh, gosh, I woke up a bit too early this morning, and it caught up to me where I needed to just catch a few winks, but those bastards put a quick end to that. I'm all awake now, and you can bet I would never, ever cast a vote for any of those pigs. Atta girl, Cynthia. Stay true to your values. And I am ashamed. Terribly, terribly, terribly ashamed. Mostly. You know, when Nitwit Nero shows up on Monday in Atlanta Fulton County court, it'd be interesting to see if the judge or Fonnie Willis, for instance, is interested in inquiring as to what Nitwit Nero meant when he triped out on Tripe Social.
The failed district attorney of Fulton County, Fonnie Willis, insisted on a $200,000 bond for me. I assume, therefore, that she thought I was a flight risk. I'd fly far away, maybe to Russia, 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 share a gold dome suite with Vladimir.
They're on a first-name basis.
Never to be seen or heard from again.
Devoutly to be wished.
Would I be able to take my very understated airplane with the gold Trump affix for all to see? Probably not. I'd be much better off flying commercial. I'm sure nobody would recognize me.
I'd go down to Guadalajara and get a new face. You threatening to leave the country there, Mr. Trump?
It's President Trump. No, it's not.
Your Honor, I think defendant has provided us with sufficient reason to insist that he surrender his passport. Granted.
But.
So that's the program. That's this prayer meeting Wednesday. John in Central PA says, Trump mugshot. They let him use his public photo for the mugshot? Seriously? You see why I say they treat him with kid gloves? one of the worst Americans ever to live, and he gets to be treated decent by a system that oppressed so many people. Oh, that was federal court. It's going to be an entirely different kettle of fish, one suspects, tomorrow evening around prime time when he turns himself in. But yeah, that's the program. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks for being part of this community. Really, sincerely. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast. Share it, recommend it. Really would help. Seeing a little growth in the numbers. And by the way, as to the over-under, Brother Deacon Asa says, burn you heretics, it's a comfortable 70 here in Paradise. The hottest it got here this summer was 93. If I was in Canoodlia, Brother Deacon, I don't think I'd be suggesting anything burn. And the Brother Deacon also adds, I'm definitely taking the over on venereal Vespasian. So we got one over and one under, one under. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you're eligible, or plot out when you plan to get your next one. Remember, there's a weirdly mutating strain out there. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots. They don't give a damn about anybody but themselves, and they don't care much for that. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if a cheese bro comes towards you saying, I demand to be heard by 5 o'clock on Friday, well, avoid that indicted co-conspirator like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.